As You're On, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, we are back yet again for another week as we head closer and closer to our 300th episode.
I know.
Exciting.
What number are we on? What is this?
This is a great question. Let me pull up our...
I've just trusted you. I can't keep track, you know? It's like, what episodes are we counting? Is it just the pop culture roundups? Is it all episodes ever?
So this is pop culture roundup number 192.
But
the Snow White episode last week was our 292nd regular episode. So we're actually getting very close to, I guess, our 500th episode overall.
What are we gonna do?
And like, if we timed this correctly, you know, like if we did some shenanigans, we could probably get our 300th main episode to also be our 500th overall episode.
We'll
see how that works. But we might have to release like some extra, like an extra pop culture roundup or something. So, but yes, amazing. We're getting close. In like, probably May. Will be May, June.
Well, no, because I'm gone for 2 weeks this month.
What?
I'm going to Japan.
Oh, yes, that's right. I knew you were going to Japan. I didn't realize when that was. Wait, when is that?
It's April 21st through May 2nd.
21st. Oh, my gosh. Okay, crazy.
I know.
Crazy. Wait, I'm like, we're actually not going to get to the 300th episode until like July, because you're gone those weeks, and then I'm gone like a couple of weeks, or I'm gone a week in May, and then I'm gone a couple of weeks in June. Okay. So.
Oh my gosh.
Very interesting. Also, your birthday episode is somewhere in there. As well.
Oh no, I don't even know what to do then. This is all good stuff. This is all proof that long distance podcasting is no joke. We literally lose track of everything we have going on. So yeah, we'll just continue to collate questions as they come in, and maybe we'll get to it by November. I don't know. We'll see.
It's like we've bungled our way through this podcast this long. It's like we will continue to do so, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like much better podcasts have quit much faster than we have.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I think we're up there though. I've been riding that high of being number 15 pop culture podcast.
Oh, yes. According to that random man who emailed
Zillow,
me.
I don't know.
Zillow? No, it was not a reputable source like Zillow. Although, imagine if Zillow got into podcast. Yes, we should be a Michelin star podcast.
I think so. I think we have everything we need: quality, content, and vibes. So,
this week had so much fun, so many fun sort of stories. I thought, like little random. Little random.
Is this going to be another one where you're like, on TikTok, I saw a video of a guy doing a routine and it was so funny?
Okay, that feels rude. The number of times that I've had to listen to. Okay, so there's this woman on The Bachelor. Her name is Sadie. And she
I have so much good Bachelor gossip, but I don't even get to talk about it because it's irrelevant at this point. So
what do you mean it's irrelevant?
Well, no one's watching it, and nobody cares.
Are you still watching?
You definitely don't care. No, but I'm on the Bachelor Reddit still, and I have my faves. I still like follow and like spy on, you know, like hate check up on, you know, the most drama of them all.
How's the racist one who ended up marrying the black guy?
Rachel Kirkconnell.
Yeah.
As in, you see Matt James around.
Yes.
Oh my god, Matthew, I swear I talked about this because it was so big, but they broke up. He dumped her.
R.I.P.
he dumped her in Japan. No less. He led her.
Are you worried
on
the same fate
for 3 years
might be heading to you?
Yeah. Now I'm worried. Now I know it's cursed. Breakup? It's the go-to spot for dudes to dump their girlfriends. But
who else?
No, he dumped her. Well, I'm just saying, a trend starts you, with one, so
Rachel Kirkconnell. I'm sure there's some Japanese people who've been broken up with over there.
Of course,
you know.
Of course. No, but it was a whole thing, and it was like he did that Father God breakup announcement. Remember?
No, I don't. But you know
he
what?
He was like, I'm... oh, Father God, lead Rachel and us through this breakup. Father God, we love you and we
I
believe
no
in what you'll bring. No.
That's crazy. Maybe you didn't bring it up on the podcast. Maybe it was one of those weeks where it was like we didn't do a pop culture roundup.
Yeah,
for some
maybe.
Reason.
It was iconic. Mm. I was obsessed. I listened to a 2-hour interview with her just because I was like the voyeurism of watching this couple implode. And, you know, Matt James' vibes were always off, and I felt validated in that. But then also it's like, am I rooting for Rachel Kirkconnell? No. So it was all around messy and delightful, and that's what you missed on Bachelor.
Well, speaking of God, Nation. Does the phrase get me to God's country mean anything to you?
Yeah, I saw this.
Oh my gosh. So funny. So funny. So this week's episode of Saturday Night Live was hosted by none other than Best Actress winner Mikey Madison. And the musical guest was Morgan Wallen, the country star with a number of controversies and scandals surrounding him. It was sort of interesting that they even brought him back, because the first time that he was on SNL a couple of years ago, it was like sort of right after the pandemic, and during the pandemic, I guess. And he was scheduled to perform, and then all of these people were like, wait, we just saw him at a party with like no mask on like last night. Are you gonna let him on the show? So SNL had to like cancel him and then rebook him for later in the season once COVID had sort of settled down. But so he was on the show this Saturday. He performed his two songs, and then, you know, at the end of the episode, the host is like, oh, like, thank you to, you know, the musical guest, blah, blah, blah. And then everyone just sort of stands and like hugs each other during the credits. And Morgan Wallen looked annoyed. And the moment that he like thought that it was done, he sort of like walked off the stage, like straight down the middle aisle toward the camera. So the camera's still rolling. Everyone else is like, you know, smiling, hugging each other. And he's just like storming off set. Keenan and Ego Nwodum were both like gave each other a look that then people were screenshotted and were passing around Twitter. And then Morgan Wallen later posted a picture of his private jet on Instagram with the catchphrase, get me to God's country. And people were like, wait, like, is he saying that New York isn't God's country? Like, is this related to SNL? Did he have a bad time at SNL? And then, of course, people just turned Get Me to God's Country into a meme all over Twitter, where it's like people like posting a picture of an AMC set with the phrase Get Me to God's Country, like all like Cracker Barrel, Olive Garden, like all kinds of places. So very entertaining. I don't know why he was so pissed off about Saturday Night Live, but apparently he was not having a good time. And then I read an interview with Keenan today where he was sort of like, yeah, I don't know what was going on there, but like, if he was saying that New York is not God's country, it's like, well, isn't everybody God's country supposedly if you're Christian? Like, very interesting. So
I saw a sources say damage control was done because someone reported to Hollywood Reporter or Variety that it had been planned and choreographed that way, and that was how he did it in, you know, the run through and so there was no drama at all. It was just like how it was scripted, so it's absolutely not a story, and
it was scripted.
You shouldn't read into
it
to
charge
at all.
Off the stage, which is not how they ever do that. Interesting.
Yeah, it's exactly how it happened in rehearsal and with camera blocking. So I don't know. That's just the leftist media at it again.
Lies, lies, spin. He was a paid protester. It was a crisis actor. It wasn't even Morgan Wallen.
Yeah. No, I also love the richness of, like, I mean, just the the conservatives being like, yeah, country, you know, middle America, that's where it's at. Get out of those cities. But it's like he's also flying a private jet. So it's like, is he down to earth? Is he one of the people? I don't think so. I don't think he can be your hero for taking his jet all the way back to wherever he lives.
Mm-hmm.
So cute. I saw people get mad. Chapel Roan was on a podcast.
Oh, yes. Call Her Daddy. Yes. I did see the clips of this. Chapel Roan is just, I think we all come to the terms of the.
No, I want to. I think
she's just bad at interviews.
I want to tell this story.
She's bad at interviews. Every clip was oppressive.
I want to tell this story.
Okay, go for it.
This is a Chapel Roan apologist live and in action. The main thing that got picked up is that she was talking about, like, I mean, the thing is, Call Her Daddy's very conversational and very much like trying, like, everyone's just trying to be funny, shoot the breeze, look normal and like relatable. So at one point in the interview, Call Her Daddy is like, oh, are you close with your friends still from like the Midwest? Like, are you still close to them? And she's like, yeah, I try to be like, I love them all, but like, it's just, we're in different phases of life. Like, you know, I'm not, they're all married with kids and I don't even know if and when that'll happen for me. And then they were like, well, do you want it? And she's like, oh, like kind of hems and haws. It's sort of like, I have no idea when that would happen, how it would happen. And then she's like, and plus every person I see with a child is unhappy. And, and then she goes on to clarify, like, all of my friends who have kids are in hell. I actually don't know anyone who's happy and has children around like 1, 3, 4, 5 and under. I've literally not met anyone who's happy, anyone who has light in their eyes, who has slept. And like, as a mother. And
as someone who spent some time with Shelby as a mother, I can co-sign that, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
the eyes, like, are dead.
I really don't think, first of all, so everyone latched onto this. All these like mommy TikTokers are like, I'm personally offended that she would call me out like this. And like, oh, if you've never met anyone with light in their eyes, look at me. And it's just like, just so excited to be a mom. And I just think people need to calm down when they get this reactionary, because one, she wasn't talking about every mother everywhere. She said the people, her friends who have kids. And two, it was also pretty like, tongue in cheek, like, oh, they haven't slept, they're miserable, they hate their lives. And I think we've heard this come from various different personalities, whether it's like Kirsten Bell or someone who's like, oh yeah, man, I haven't slept in 700 years. Like, it's like, we can all relax. Like, parenting is hard. And I think that's just factually accurate. And to pretend that this is some sort of like, quote unquote, war on motherhood is just delulu. Like, please. It was barely a 30-second bit of this interview, and she has no power to pronounce war on parenting when, in fact, any energy against mothers who feel tired or who worry people think they've lost the light in their eyes should maybe turn to policies that could help elevate their experience instead of trying to get at being so defensive around anyone who would say it looks pretty miserable from the outside in.
I mean, I feel like being a parent looks extremely hard. I mean, I'm not a parent, but like, I think it's just a hard job. Like, objectively, if you know, you're caring for somebody who can't really do anything for themselves, at least for a large period of time, you're having to think about them over yourself. You're having to feed them, bathe them. They're often operating against you, against what you're trying to do to them. And then,
are you thinking of a particular experience you've had watching a child and a mother?
Sometimes a kid is supposed to go to bed and then they keep coming out. They're saying that they can't go to bed because they don't have a sock on, and they put the sock on. They can't go to bed because the sock is on. They're crying.
Matt, have you met any of your friends? Do they have the light in their eyes still, or? Well, or has it been snuffed out by parenthood?
This is what I would say. all of my friends who have children, they are very different after having children than they are before. Like, you can just tell that there is like a change. I think it's like a very big life moment that there's like before you have a kid and after you have a kid. And there's certain people who are like more hairy than others, but it's just like, it's a big thing. It completely shifts your priorities. But
yeah.
I also think that, you know, like as a marathon runner, not comparing the two at all really, but like marathon running is not something that you would look at and go, wow, that looks fun. Like if you go to a marathon and you look at the runners, they all look bad, but there is something very like gratifying and enjoyable about it. And that's why so many people do it. And I think it's the same thing with parenting. It's like, yeah, there's lots of negative sort of difficult aspects of it. But I think the people, lots of people would say, well, it's just, it's so rewarding. And there are so many wonderful pieces of it as well. It just like really changes your life a lot from when you're, you know, 23 and can do whatever. And then, oh wait, now you're taking care of a child. Also, I do think, you know, she's from what, Missouri? Like probably a lot of her friends had kids young. And I think that's especially true with the people who I knew growing up who it's like, oh yeah, they're in college and then they're 23 and they have a kid. And it's like, oh, that's like a, that's an insane difference when you're, when you're like basically used to having no responsibilities and then you graduate college and you have a job and kids. It's like, oh yeah, you can see how they're just like not prepared for that world. Yeah. So, but
yeah, well, war on motherhood continues with Matt coming in hot, but what else did Chapel Roan say and do that made you think she needs media training?
I just, she's just like, her whole kind of like attitude, I feel like, is just kind of ornery. I don't know. Like, I mean, I obviously really like her music, and I think she is sort of a very interesting pop culture figure. But I think we just kind of have to get used to, like, I guess, like, this is how she is operating. Like, she was again talking about, like, oh, people looking to her for political advice. She was, what else? She said something else that I thought, that I saw clips of that I thought was
kind of, I liked her. I mean, she talked about like, oh, just be single. Like, I'm in a relationship, but everyone should be single.
Yeah. Like, and I think she's fun. She's just like, if you're looking for like Keke Palmer, like that's not what you're getting with Chapel Roan. Like, it's a very different sort of energy. And it is a little like, I don't know, sort of, I don't, not necessarily like antagonistic, but like, she's not like there to people please. And to sort of like be a shiny, you know, happy celebrity. Like she's a little bit prickly.
Love it.
So
I do. I love
the,
I'm like, yes. Honestly, I do feel like this was good PR for her though. I think she came across better than, you know, crying on Instagram or
I feel like the best PR for her is just like, is like do Lady Gaga, you know what I mean? Where it's like, just be weird, do like public, like weird stunts, and you know, like wear your outfits, do your performances, sing, and maybe like we don't need all of the like interviews about you as a person. Like, be more a little like aloof, I guess, if I was like coaching her career wise. But I also think like this seems like it's her personality and we've seen it a number of times now. Like, I think that this is like, people are just going to get used to it and it's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
My favorite interview this week, did you see Alex Consani on Chicken Shop Date? Because this was the most unhinged collab I have ever witnessed. Like, Chicken Shop Date is always like a little bit freakiest freak in her interviews when she's interviewing somebody, but she had Alex Consani, who's a trans model, on, and she's only 21, and she was unhinged in like, in a way that Chicken Shop Date you could tell was sort of like thrown off by, and it was and it was the complete reverse of the usual dynamic where Chicken Shop Date was just like what's going on here, what am I doing. It was so funny. Like, you have to watch the clips if you haven't seen it, because the stuff that this girl was saying was just wild. And when Chicken Shop Date is getting nervous, you know it's like, you know it's funny. So it was.
What was it? Highlight reel.
Oh, I mean, she was like, she was talking about like aliens, and she was like making weird gurgling noises and stuff, and sort of like being mean to Chicken Shop Date, but in a way that, was like kind of joking, but like not really. Like Chicken Shop Date asked Alex, oh, like what, I read that if you weren't a model, you would be like a mathematician. And she was like, oh yeah, like that, you know, that's what I would do. And then Alex asked Chicken Shop, like, well, what would you do if you weren't doing this? And Chicken Shop was like, oh, I think I'd be a dancer. And Alex was like, a background dancer? And Chicken Shop, they was like, no, I'd want to be a regular dancer. And Alex was like, oh, sorry, that was kind of shady, I guess. It was like, yes, that was very shady. But she was just like, yeah, she was like talking about being a witch. And just, it was just a very unhinged series of
forward to it.
Yeah, you gotta watch it.
Did you read Ben Affleck's GQ cover story / interview?
No, I did not.
Yeah, it less fun, but mesmerizing in its own way, because he is a guy who loves to talk but not say anything of note. Like, instead of your usual like profile, it is an interview, so it's like you get some color from the interviewer, but then a lot of it is just the copy paste of the Q&A. And so it was just like, wow, he is just circling the same drain and thinking he's making a lot of sense, and it's just not working. He was mainly cornered about the J-Lo divorce.
Yeah.
And so he sort of opened up and was like, yeah, people think they know us but they don't, type thing. But he said it in the most like condescending sort of self-important way, where he's like, oh, it's all just sort of uninteresting when you think about it. I'm really just the most boring guy. It really doesn't come down to drama. It just comes down to life. And if you're sitting with us in life, and it wouldn't come as a surprise, it's not one thing, it's all these things, and it's really nothing except it's nothing that could be seen as interesting if you really knew us and if you really considered us as people. And it's like, okay, sir, you got this cover story because people are interested. But a lot of it is just circling around, like, he's a producer, I guess, right? Like, he has this production company where everyone involved gets a piece of the pie, type thing. So it's self-funded, but yeah. And so he's like really trying to spin, like, that's his thing now. But then the interviewer's like, well, how do you decide when, because he's trying to hype up, he just wants to be a producer. And he's like, well, how do you decide when you step into the spotlight like you are in your film, The Accountant Too? And Ben was like, well, I mean, when it speaks to me, like, it's, you know, but I really don't like it. I like doing the production. I like getting home in time for my kids. I like doing this. I don't know. I just found it mesmerizing because I think he is sort of this interesting personality that is resistant to being seen as a personality. But like, even the interviewer brought up all his memeable moments of like smoking a cigarette or dropping his packages or spilling his coffee. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why people latch onto this. I think it's just, I don't give a shit. And like, I don't think about it. And I just come across as real. So it was a good celebrity profile in that it's pretty neutral. It wasn't trying to like, you know, build him up, but it also wasn't trying to tear him down. It left it up to interpretation, which I always appreciate. And so, yeah, he's promoting his production company while also promoting his upcoming movie and also getting ahead of the J-Lo story. And he had a lot to say if you're interested in hearing him talk about it.
It's like, am I interested in hearing him talk about it? I sort of probably feel like not.
There's probably some good summary articles you can find. Check the HuffPo.
I sort of don't find Ben Affleck that interesting. I mean, I guess maybe that's sort of the point of the like. I think he's funny, sort of like as this beleaguered straight man. Who just kind of like, yeah, just does become a meme because he always just sort of looks over it. But I feel like him actually as a person, like, aside from being a meme, is kind of like, okay, he dated a couple of hot people, he like, you know, was in some movies, he's an okay actor, he's like a fine director, you know, I don't know, I think he's kind of whatever. Okay, I feel like we have to get to the actual story of the week, which is the Rachel Zegler Snow White drama, we recorded our episode last week, just like just before the big bomb started dropping on this case. So we didn't get to talk about it in the podcast, but I feel like we need to do an update, which is so Snow White did poorly at the box office, which we sort of knew. And there have been a lot of different controversies spiraling around this
which we talked movie, about.
Which we talked about last week. You know, there was the dwarves. There's the fact that the original story is kind of rapey. There was like, oh, Rachel Zegler and Gal Gadot didn't get along on set. There was the racial element of like people didn't like the fact that Rachel Zegler was Hispanic, like all kinds of different things. But Disney, for whatever reason, or for obvious reasons, I guess, decided that they were going to try to pin the fact that this movie has done so poorly in the box office on the fact that Rachel Zegler tweeted a pro-Palestine tweet way back when. And so Disney has sort of been on a media offensive, like, you know, kind of leaking stories and sources say and that kind of thing, spiraling around the movie in this past week after the first weekend's bad box office. And they sort of shared this story from the making of the movie, which I think they thought was going to make Disney come out in a good light and make Rachel Zegler sort of the bad guy for the box office score being so low, but actually really backfired against them. So at the like CinemaCon or some kind of upfronts for years ago for Snow White, Rachel Zegler like attended she attended and, you know, like said some things, whatever, then tweeted a link to the remarks about Snow White. And then afterwards underneath it, like responded to herself and said, you know, free Palestine. And apparently the studio was not happy about this, and neither was Gal Gadot because is Israeli. And so the producer, Mark Platt, who is Ben Platt's dad, who is also Jewish, flew across the country from L.A. to New York to try to convince Rachel Zegler to delete this tweet, which wasn't even like a main tweet itself. It was a comment to a tweet that already existed. And Rachel Zegler apparently said no, she wasn't going to delete this tweet. But this caused everybody to go into a tizzy, and Disney was sort of saying, like, basically because of that tweet, that's why the movie did so poorly. But turns out Rachel Zegler just kind of looks like a badass for saying, no, I'm not deleting this tweet, when this like very, very high powered executive came to tell her to delete it. And so that was sort of, you know, the whole saga, whatever.
Yeah.
But then Mark Platt's son, not Ben Platt, but another brother, decided that he was upset about this stuff. And so got into the comment section of a post about this and wrote this long diatribe about how immature Rachel Zegler was and how she put her own needs above the needs of others and how she's a spoiled little brat and how she tanked the whole movie.
Mark had to leave his family to fly across the country to reprimand this 20-year-old employee.
Yes. Yeah. And how like Rachel should have thought about Gal Gadot, because by saying this, like, it really put Gal Gadot in danger and she had to hire extra security and this whole thing. And it's like, it's just so tone deaf because they're complaining about these minor insignificant hardships that these extremely rich people have to deal with, when Rachel Zegler is literally defending, you know, thousands of people who have been murdered and injured and their houses have been destroyed in Palestine. And it's like, okay, I think that we have a discrepancy here. And the fact that you're getting so turned up about this is actually sort of proving the point that they were trying to make to begin with. So this, I think, has really backfired against Disney. And I saw a lot of articles, you know, from Vanity Fair, from Vulture, like from lots of publications that were like, wait, Rachel Zegler seems like cool as hell. And how embarrassing for all of these Disney people, especially the Platts. And this, of course, is coming after the interview that Ben Platt did a couple of years ago, where they asked him about being a Nepo baby. And his PR person jumped in and was like, no, he can't answer that. And then they published that section of the interview in the story and made them look so stupid.
Well, I think it's also like you can't blame Rachel for the bad performance while also accepting that every single critique of the film only cited her as the bright spot of the movie.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, it's a bad faith argument to like pin all this on her and her politics when it's like, well, without her, the movie would have literally nothing going for it. Like, absolutely no one liked anything that was happening here. Like, me aside, no one liked the music. No one liked Gal Gadot. No one was like, wow, this script is so sharp. Oh my gosh, the prince is so cool as a non-prince. Like, it was like, this movie wasn't doing well. And the only thing that was saving it was Rachel being such a good star. And so, yeah, it just highlights again how Disney is more than willing to throw their stars under the bus, especially their female stars, especially their young up-and-coming stars, even though they want to profess to be this, like, really empowering for women, like, yes, queen, we're going to highlight all these princess voices and really modern. Like, it's like, no, this is all bullshit. And you have your producer literally coming down to say, it's not about the story. It's not about what we're, you know, what culture we're professing. It's all about the bottom line. And like, oh, yeah, these are repercussions, and all the repercussions they can cite are monetary. And it's like, okay, you just cost Disney $1 million. And it's like, well, okay, like, don't you think that as a producer, some of that is about the thing you're producing and not the stars attached to it? So, yeah, I think we were fairly pro Rachel on our Snow White podcast. And I think this highlights again sort of the icky feeling of watching people want to blame her for a single tweet or an abrasive interview, or rightfully calling out like patterns of patterns of abuse or patterns of, you know, anti-feminism or kind of outdatedness. And so it's silly to try and hate on Rachel Zegler without even acknowledging the maybe biased approach coming from this producer, who also, I'm pretty sure, helped produce Gal Gadot's like movie on the attack of October 7th, right?
Oh, I am not sure. I didn't even know that Gal Gadot had a movie on that. But
yeah, or maybe she screened it for him or something. I don't know. But yeah, yucky, I mean, all around.
Mark Platt is like a big major producer, yeah. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so not great. And she, for her part, has kind of remained silent. I'm sure it sucks to have Disney turn on you, but I also think, yeah, hopefully this is more positive press than bad press for her in the end.
I mean, it's like, she got the money out of this. So, like, she got her payday. Yeah, she's the good. Movie isn't making any more money. It's not like they're going to make a sequel to this. So I think she's sort of fine. You know, she's going to do a Vita on the West End, and, you know, she'll live her life and do her thing. She also has the Hunger Games money that she's rolling in. Like, yeah, she's doing well for herself. Yeah. Do we have any other news, or would you like to get into Love It or Hate It?
Let's Love It or Hate It.
Okay. I have a podcast that I feel you will be into. I haven't really been into podcasts lately. Like, really since the pandemic, I have not listened to a sort of like narrative style podcast, but my brothers sent me this one. It's called The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. It's from Christianity Today, and they sent it to me, and they were like, oh, like, we think that you might be interested in this, which to me means like, oh, this must be some sort of like liberal, like organized religion's bad sort of podcast.
Yeah.
It is fascinating. It's about the satanic panic in the like 80s and 90s and how that, you know, completely changed like the political landscape and the religious landscape and all, you know, just all manners of life. But it sort of goes into all of these different instances of like these cults and how everybody back during that time period thought that there were all of these like satanic groups and people that were lurking around and murdering babies and drinking blood and putting razor blades in Halloween candy and all of these rumors going around, when really there was actually very little evidence that any of that had ever happened, let alone was like rampant, like people were talking about. And the podcast is just really fascinating as it like sort of goes through history and looks at that, but then also all of the things that were sort of going on around that same time that led to that. And all of these shady people in the church and in politics who were using these stories to try to like build up their own clout. But I think the thing that's most interesting is it's sort of coming from the perspective of, okay, the church is saying, oh, there is all this evil in the world. All the evil is within these like satanic groups. If we can sort of cordon ourselves off and make a group that's like just good Christian people and keep everybody else on the outside, then we will be okay. And what the podcast is saying is like, no, actually everybody has like a little bit of evil inside of them. And if you think that the evil is out there, then what that really does is it allows for that evil to sort of like run rampant within your group. And so, you know, it goes into all of these like grooming allegations and sexual assaults and money laundering and all kinds of stuff that was going on within the church and within conservative politics at that time, while those leaders were like, oh my gosh, no, it's all of these like witches that are trying to murder your children. And it's like, no, it's actually not the witches, because the witches aren't even real. The thing that is the problem are the pedophiles who are clergy members, etc. So anyways, I've just found it very fascinating. I feel like if you are a sort of coming out
so
of...
So it's produced by
Christianity Today. But Christianity Today, I guess, is a very liberal outlet. I didn't really realize that, but that's what my brothers were telling me, that if you're sort of a like Trumpy evangelical, you probably don't like Christianity Today. Christianity Today is much more liberal. I'm like 7 episodes into the podcast, and because I've listened to everything that's out, and so far I've yet to come across an active podcast. Yes, it's active. But I've yet to come across anything where I'm like, that seems a little dicey to me. I'm on board with it. So I think it's very interesting. And I don't know. I mean, I find history just interesting in general, but I think that this is fascinating because it's like there's bits of it from like the 90s and just from things that like you would probably remember from growing up or like remember stories about. But at the same time, it's like far enough back that it's not stuff that you like have a good grasp on. So it's like I'm learning about things that I kind of already knew, but like didn't fully. I don't know. Yeah, I've just been eating it up. I think it's so interesting, and it's a
very interesting, curious. I haven't really consumed any Christian media, but that sounds good.
I mean, like with
not that it's like.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like, I mean, maybe Mormonism is like this to a certain degree, but I think because with Mormons, it's newer and there's less like divisions in it, that like the spectrum maybe isn't quite as wide, although I guess you have the crazy people who are like marrying 6 women and whatever, like on that end. Mm-hmm. But I feel like within like evangelical Christianity, there is such a broad spectrum between like, you know, the like God is a woman, like let's have gay pastors kind of people, and then the like Duggars. And I think that this is definitely like a lot closer on the left then, because it's really taking lots of shots at like the Reagan, Jerry Falwell sort of group of people in the
good 80s.
So yeah, it's an interesting lesson.
Interesting.
What do you have?
I had a busy week. My gosh, I don't even know what to talk about. I guess the thing that stands out the most that I actually enjoyed was I heard about the Broadway play, John Proctor is the Villain, which is starring Sadie Sink. And so I found, since I don't live in New York and I can't go see it anytime soon, I read the script online. Look at me. But it's basically, it tells the story of like an English class during the Me Too movement as they study the Crucible and sort of the parallels being drawn between their lived experiences and how the Crucible is read and interpreted. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's from this like playwright who, this is her first big, you know, big show. It's directed by the woman who did The Outsiders, which you and Rob loved. And obviously it stars Sadie Sink, who I find such an interesting actor. And I really like that she's gravitated towards more of these Broadway serious dramas. And I don't get to see it. So I don't know why I'm talking about this, except for our maybe New York audience who can go see it. But, and also you, because I need you to go and report back to me. But I found it really, really compelling. One, because it's such an interesting premise. But two, it does play into a lot of like pop music. And there's a lot of, I don't want to scare you off, but a lot of Taylor Swift references or like, you know, timely things that come in. Like Lord and modern media and like, you know, all of that. And so it's fun to see those probably skewing pretty millennial stories come to play. And obviously I grew up reading The Crucible and like even I probably think about it, you know, relatively often for considering I read it in high school once, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. So I'm like, oh yeah, The Crucible, and like how we talk about it versus how it maybe would feel reading it today. And so I found it very fascinating, and I really love the idea of all of us who are grown up now, who have resources and time and abilities, processing our childhood and our experiences, and sort of like looking back at things. And also crazy that something could be. Yeah, like 2018 was so long ago in a lot of ways, and kind of the Me Too movement and how we are portraying that now. And yeah, it's just weird to be an adult on the end of things that mattered and how those are being reinterpreted now. So it sounded like a good time. It was a really good script, very interesting characters and twisty turny, female rage, all of that. Love it. So if you can see it, go see it. And if not, I will DM you the link to a verified transcript.
Yeah, I hadn't really heard very much about this. So it's Tony season right now. There's like a crap ton of shows that are all opening within the next couple, like they're all in previews, yeah. I think for the most part now, or about to go into previews. Because of the Tony eligibility window, and everything will sort of open in the spring. And so I hadn't heard of this show, but one of my friends texted me and was like, hey, I won the lottery. Like, have you heard anything about this? Is it good? And I was like, oh no, I haven't really heard anything, but like, let me know. And then she texted me after the show and she was like, oh, this was incredible. Like one of the best things I've seen this year. So I'm very excited to see it. It's supposedly good. Yeah, it's Sadie Sink. Plays are usually pretty easy to get tickets to, especially if it's not like a super well-known play or with a super, super big star. And not to say that Sadie Sink isn't a big star, but I think with the Broadway sort of audience of old white people, they might not be in on the Stranger Things kids just yet. But yeah, I'm excited to see it. This season has been pretty good so far. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff. I just saw the picture of Dorian Gray this weekend, which is the adaptation where Sarah Snook plays all of the characters. And that was incredible. Like, watching her talent and being able to do all of that was just absolutely mesmerizing, and the way that they stage it and everything. I definitely want to see this. I might get press tickets to it, otherwise I'll rush it at some point. And yeah, it'll be out for the next couple of months, I assume, because it's getting good reviews. So maybe you can come and visit, Shelby, and we can see it.
I know, but the timing with this trip and all of that.
Yeah, I guess that's
true. Rob will be there. I told him to go, so.
You're probably going to get broken up with while you're in Japan.
So yeah, I'm going to be done. Oh, mother. My God.
And the light's gone from your eyes because you have a child. And lots going on. but yes. Okay. Well, I will try and see that. In the meantime, email us questions for our mailbag episode whenever we get to that. And we will be back on Thursday, not to discuss Rachel Zegler, but to discuss the person who I always get Rachel Zegler confused with, Jenna Ortega, in Death of a Unicorn. Thanks for listening.